Welcome to a very special edition of the Timberwolves Talk Podcast. I am Michael Rand, Chris Hine here as well. We were planning on doing this Friday, but certain information has come to light, Chris. A busy Thursday. We no longer
very busy.
We no longer only have the Robert Covington four-team, 12-player trade to talk about. We have a D'Angelo Russell, Andrew Wiggins blockbuster with a side dish of Gorgui Dieng heading out. What a last few days.
Holy
even
cow.
Throw in the, you know, the Teague trade from a few weeks ago. This team is like Gerson Rose has stripped this down to the studs. We'll get into so much of this.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, obviously the biggest thing we need to talk about is D'Angelo Russell to the Timberwolves, Andrew Wiggins, a top three protected 2021 pick, mm-hmm. and a second round pick in 2021 going to Golden State, the blockbuster of all blockbusters. Your immediate thoughts?
This is, I think, one of the best days of the franchise's recent history.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
All my dreams came true.
I know. They got rid of Wiggins.
All at once.
And they got D'Angelo Russell in here in the same move. I mean, you just think about, like, the discussions that we've had, discussions fans have had online, whether it be on blogs, on Twitter,
right.
The comments section of articles.
Yeah.
We always wondered, what was it going to take to get rid of Andrew Wiggins' contract? What was it going to take to get somebody like D'Angelo Russell to come here and to do it in one fell swoop while giving up only one first-round draft pick and a second-round draft pick? Feels like a pretty significant win for this organization.
It kind of feels like what they would have had to do in two separate moves.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Does that
yeah,
kind of feel
yeah.
like it feels like, and again, like I readily admit that my opinion of Wiggins has probably been jaded and tainted by just how closely we watch these games. You look at the overall numbers, they look a lot better. You know,
look better this year.
Almost put them side by side with Russell, and you're like, okay, well, why are the Wolves having to give up so much else? But you know, in watching him play, you just know that it's been such a up and down struggle. It's been, you know, three steps back, one step forward kind of thing. At least, mm-hmm. especially since he signed his max deal in the summer of 2017. So yeah, it feels like, you know, we'd probably talked about, you know, does it take one, you know, can you deal a first round pick and Wiggins to take someone else's junk, some expiring
right.
contract, and then do you have to trade another pick or two to get Russell plus something else? They mm-hmm. did it all at once. They got it all done
at once.
Sometimes all your dreams come true.
Mm-hmm.
Is the only way to put it.
This front office, you know, to give them some credit here, when Gerson Rosas came in,
yeah.
This is exactly how they sold their vision for the organization. Yeah. We are going to surround Karl Anthony Towns with complementary talent. They identified their guy in D'Angelo Russell. They did not give up when he didn't sign here over the summer. They kept at it. They kept at him. In the meantime, they worked with what they had. They worked with Wiggins, got him to buy into what they were selling, got him to revamp his game, make him a more even if it's a little bit slightly more tradable asset.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And they said that the main vehicle for change in this organization was going to be through trade. And look what happened over the last week, three trades that have reshaped the future of this roster for the next few years going forward here. They stated what they were going to do, and they did exactly what they said they were going to do.
Speaking of that, you can give Rosas all the credit you want. I think I need a little credit in this.
Of course.
Because
I was getting to that.
I was mentioning to one of our new editors, Nyla.
Mm-hmm.
She and I, a few days ago, were sitting in the office, and I was reading an article about Mookie Betts, and I was like, why are the Red Sox trying to trade Mookie Betts? We got into this big thing about Mookie Betts and kind of going back and forth, and it's just like, man, you know, Mookie Betts, maybe they'll trade him with David Price. That happened like 3 hours later. And so, you know, a day or two later, we're in the office again. And I said, remember when that happened? And she's like, yeah, anything else you'd like to speak into existence
right.
like that? And then I said, I'd like to speak into existence a D'Angelo Russell for Andrew Wiggins trade. Again, this is, as you know, I was just, this is after the Covington trade. I was worried about how these last 32, 33 games were going to look, because while it was going to be possible for them to do more this summer, I was like, it was going to be a legitimate bummer of a 2 or 3 months if something didn't happen at the deadline.
And you just worry about the impact that that's going to have on Towns, on the organization as a whole. But now, rejuvenated.
And I said, I want to speak it into existence, but I don't want it to happen again at 11:30 p.m. like the Covington trade. And I'm tied up from like 9:45 to 11 on trade deadline day. So I'd like to speak it into existence for around noon Thursday.
And bang.
Bang. Almost exactly noon Thursday it happened. So I'm gonna speak a lot of things into existence now because I'm on a roll.
To kind of go behind the mechanics and just kind of talking to people about how this went down. The Wolves had a price point in mind.
Yeah.
For how they were going to accomplish this. They didn't really back down from that point. There were a lot of reports out there. Some may have been more accurate than others about what was being offered, what was maybe willing to be accepted on Golden State's part, because Golden State had a big incentive here to get under the tax and avoid repeater tax status.
Even though they're printing money in their new stadium, even arena this year,
that still matters to NBA owners.
Sure, of course it does.
It's one thing to be over the tax when you're competitive, but when you're looking at the lottery, it's tough to go into the tax. On the flip side of that, the Wolves did go into the tax with this deal.
Yeah, only a little bit.
Only by a little bit, so they're going to have to pay very minimally Glenn Taylor, but it's still money out of Glenn Taylor's pocket. He did sign off on going into the tax so that they can make this deal work, because Golden State sent two other players over. They're sending salary over to try and get under the tax, which they appear to have accomplished. The Wolves go a little bit over. Taylor's gonna have to pay something, but given the expiring contracts they have in Alan Crabb and Evan Turner, who came over in the Covington trade, they will have no problem getting back under the tax next year. They're gonna have some cap room to operate. They will easily avoid repeater status next year. Shouldn't be a problem for them going forward, but they did pony up a little bit to get this deal to the finish line.
Well, and that's the interesting thing. And I'm going to circle back on the moves again in a minute, but you just got me thinking about how, you know, everything they did positions themselves still pretty well for next offseason. Because the most amazing thing to me is that in all of this, even though, you know, we've heard all about how the 2020 draft is supposed to be weak, the Wolves came through this with 2 first-round picks in 2020, their own and Brooklyn's, which, you know, assuming Brooklyn makes the playoffs, that will convey and would be, you know, probably a pick in the high teens, because if Brooklyn makes the playoffs, it's still not going to be, you know, a very good playoff seed. So you're looking at, you know, the Wolves probably having, you know, their own lottery pick, which you would imagine if it falls, you know, normally will be around 7 or 8, kind of based on where they are now. Plus, you know, $16 million or so in cap space as I see it now for next season, and then still, you know, the opportunity to get creative with some of that. I don't know if a James Johnson wave and stretch becomes palatable if you start to think about wanting to add a third max guy, something like that.
Right.
You know, getting creative to do that while staying under the, you know, to be like actually under the cap to be able to sell. Not a lot of teams are going to have cap space this year, this offseason.
Right.
They could be one of those teams that has that cap space. So they've not only added a piece, they've given themselves some flexibility.
They have given themselves some flexibility. They're going to have to use some of that. I think just in conversations with people around the team, I do think that, you know, somebody like Malik Beasley might be...
If they want to keep him.
If they want to keep him.
Sure.
Like, he's going to fit into their long-term plans, and they might have to match an offer sheet or something like that. So some of that space might have to go to him if they deem him a long-term fit here.
And their draft picks would take up space,
and their draft picks take up space as well. But you also, you know, you have the ammunition with 2 first-round picks to maybe, if you target somebody a little higher, to just package those and move up. If so many scenarios, you might be able to drop back recoup some picks. I don't know. You know,
right.
The draft. I always find it interesting when people say, oh, this is a weak draft or this is a strong draft. Just how often that actually materializes.
Right.
I always tend to take those evaluations with a grain of salt. You know, barring a superstar like Zion at the
right.
potential superstar at the top of the draft, like when once you get past like the first couple, it's like it's kind of a could be kind of a crapshoot in a lot of ways.
Well, and weak draft a lot of times too means there's not a clear cut number one guy,
or
the star potential isn't great. But if you're talking about the places the Wolves are going to be picking, it might not be as weak as you might think. There might be there still might be that depth. You know, 1 through 20, 1 through 25, just not, the 1 through 8 that could be game changers, things of that nature. So
exactly.
So, we'll see. I mean, what do we want to learn now in the next 32 games? They have a point guard now. They have, this lead guard they've been seeking for their offense to pair with Towns. This is an audition in a lot of ways for the rest of the roster to a certain degree, because there's not a lot of guys or not a ton of guys that have to be under contract next year. Like, they can kind of move some parts around, things like that. So what do you want to see out of how this fits?
What exactly they're going to need around Russell and Towns.
Okay.
That's I think job number one, at least offensively. You kind of see how they're actually going to mesh. Presumably teams are really going to have to guard those two guys, so there should be some open shots for the likes of Malik Beasley, for Jared Culver, for Josh Okogie. And two, how is this going to look defensively? Because I'm a little on edge about that.
I was just looking it up. I mean, we've already talked about Towns ad nauseum, the number one center in offensive real plus minus, the dead last center out of 65 in defensive real plus minus. D'Angelo Russell is very similar. They classify him as a shooting guard on the real plus minus.
He's
a point guard,
yeah.
But I think they do that because Steph Curry is they put him as a maybe
right,
maybe it's just
right.
maybe his role in in Golden State classifies him as such. But still, among those he is compared to among those shooting guards, he is, I think, 11th in offensive plus minus out of like 128 guys, so definitely a gifted offensive player. He is 126th out of 128 on defense.
Only
Bradley Beal and somebody else. I can't remember who.
Those are very cat-like numbers, because Cat is like first in among centers and
last
among centers.
So they
first in offense,
first
last
in
defense.
So it's not like they don't have some good defensive players on the team. I guess. To that point, I mean, Culver has shown some defensive chops. Okogie
has survived the purge.
Yeah. The only one. We didn't even mention that. He and Towns are the only players left on the roster who were
from
here.
From the beginning of last
from
season.
From the beginning of the Rosa's tenure.
Yeah.
I mean, he is like just totally ripped this down to the studs. But I'd be interested to see who among the guys they got can shoot, which I think Beasley brings some of that. And one of the other guys they got too can shoot a little bit. I think it was one of the other Golden State guys, the big man, Spellman.
Spellman
can shoot a little bit. It could be a stretch for some intrigue there. But I want to see who can play defense. I want to see who among these guys has any kind of defensive chops that could, help hide the deficiencies of some guys who look like they're individually bad defenders, or how does this group grow with more time, learning under Vanderpool and figuring
and
that out?
That